Scott Ott Podcast is brought to you in part by Baldness. Are you losing your hair? Why not try the cheap, easy, guaranteed solution, Baldness? Why wait for the inevitable? Try Baldness today. And by Prescriptium, an over-the-counter medication that provides all of the side effects of the leading prescription drug at a fraction of the price. Ask your pharmacist about Prescriptium today. And by Johnson's Baby Shampoo and Drain Cleaner. Wash your hair and dissolve those nasty hairballs at the same time. Johnson's Baby Shampoo and Drain Cleaner. And by the National Endowment for the Arts, a non-profitable organization that provides food, housing, clothing, nutrition, and education for a large family in northern Texas. The National Endowment for the Arts is proud to underwrite Scott Ott Podcast. How did they all wind up in the same episode of Scott Ott Podcast? Senator Ted Cruz, Mindy Kaling, and the Washington Redskins. In this episode, we talk about industry, frugality, and integrity. And the Wall Street Journal was covering the Iowa primary and or the caucuses, actually, in Iowa, and noted that there's huge amounts of money being thrown against Ted Cruz. And the reason for that is that Ted Cruz is that rare Republican politician who openly opposes what are called the renewable fuel standards that force fuel refiners to include ethanol in their fuel mix and thus indirectly subsidize corn growers. And so you can't go into Iowa and say that you're against corn subsidies, ethanol subsidies, because, you know, that's Iowa's corn, you know, Iowa's farmers. And to go in there and openly say, I think that the government should get out of the business of telling petroleum refiners how much ethanol they have to put in their fuel. I don't think we should be in the business of subsidizing ethanol production. Cruz, for some people, is a hero for opposing this. And the Wall Street Journal article pointed out that other people are saying, gee, I don't know. I'm with him on a lot of these other issues, but man, I love the renewable fuel standards and I love that ethanol money. And I don't know, you know, but they might ultimately vote for Cruz anyway because they're with him on so much else. I will say this. There are a couple of ways to look at this story, and I'll give you the best spin and the worst spin. The best spin is that Ted Cruz is a real political hero because he is willing to stand up for principle that says the government should not be involved in manipulating the market like this. And I'm willing not only to say that in Florida, but to say that in Iowa, not just to say that in Texas where petroleum is big, but to say that in Iowa, where ethanol is big, okay? So Ted Cruz is admirable for saying this. I hope he feels, and I think he does, I hope he feels the same about other regulations that distort markets. Now, here's the sort of downside of this, okay? And some of this is just obvious, common sense, and some of this is speculative. The odds of defeating the renewable fuel standards in Congress are about as good as the odds are of taking away any other crony deal that currently exists between businesses and the federal government. So, even if Ted Cruz is elected president of the United States, it is unlikely that he will be able to eliminate the renewable fuel standards because even his Republican buddies don't agree with him on this. And they have all kinds of flips and twists and gyrations to explain why they don't agree with him on this. But it's unlikely that Ted Cruz will be able to implement this as president. He can appeal to the constitutionalists in the course of the campaign and look like a hero and then get to Washington, D.C. But ultimately, his stand won't make any difference. And there are things that happen during campaigns that are like this, that people make a big issue of something when they know, in fact, that when they get in office, there's not a darn thing that they can do about it, or in some cases, that they even intend to do about it. I have found as a general principle that politicians are most vocal and bold in the fights that they know they cannot win. Now, let me explain that. Politicians are most vocal and bold in the fights that they cannot win, because there's no cost to them in this. We had a congressman back in Pennsylvania who was a very nice man, and he would give speeches about how he was up there in Washington, D.C. fighting Nancy Pelosi. He was always fighting Nancy Pelosi. I don't know what it was between the two of them. But anyway, he was trying to fight Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi, although he was in the House, not the Senate. And that was when the Republicans were not in control. And then, next thing you know, John Boehner is Speaker of the House instead of Nancy Pelosi, and the fighting is not so vocal anymore. What happened? And we still don't get the things we want. But now we're not fighting anymore because we have Republicans in charge. So if you know you're going to lose, that's the best time. This is a schooling for you, training for your future politicians. If you know you're going to lose, that's the best time to put up a big stink about something, to make a big deal about it, because you'll go down in flames and everybody will say, man, he fought for it. Isn't it a shame that that didn't pass? Nobody will blame you for losing the vote, and you'll look good. I sometimes have concerns that Ted Cruz may be like that, although my tendency is to think that he really believes in these things that he goes down in flames fighting for. Rand Paul's a little bit like that too. What'll be the test? The litmus is, if we get the House and maintain or increase our majority there, keep the Senate and increase our majority there, ideally to get to the point where we can control debate and filibusters, and we get the White House. If we get all that, and then all of this bluster during the primaries and the election cycles for the congressman turns out to have been so much hot air, then we're going to be more than a little bit disappointed. But I like the fact that Ted Cruz is going into Iowa and openly saying the renewable fuel standards are wrong. It's not a constitutional way to run government. We shouldn't be subsidizing private businesses. We shouldn't be manipulating markets. And he's saying it standing in a cornfield, essentially. So, hurrah, huzzah, kudos to our brother Ted Cruz and my senator, Ted Cruz from Texas, my fellow Texan, for that. May his tribe multiply. Let me give you two small things, and then one big thing. There was a story in the Washington Post, which I loved, and it is that new data show that Indian women earn more than the average man. And they broke it down by race. It was white, non-Latino. You know, I don't know why they always have to say that. They go white, non-Latino, because since George Zimmerman was a white Latino. Anyway, they say they're white men, Latinos, and blacks, and then Indian women are making, on average, and I think it may include Asians too, but Indian women were making on average $63,000 a year, while the average white man was making $53,000 a year, and then the blacks and Latinos were lower than that. I forget the order of that. But somebody who was a libertarian was joking about that and essentially saying, you know, hey, well, what, you know, Indian woman privilege? Are men being discriminated against in this case? And the funny thing is that Indian women are doing that because Indian women are much more likely than the average white man to have not only a college education, but an advanced degree. In fact, I think Indian women are more likely to have an advanced degree than white men are to have a college education. So what I take from that story, though, is not that, I mean, it's kind of funny that, you know, we should start being upset that Indian women are succeeding and we should try to level the playing field so that the white men can make as much as the Indian women. And, you know, darn that Mindy Kaling, you know. I love Mindy Kaling, by the way. I don't get any money for promoting her book, but Mindy Kaling, and I'm going to just like hold this up in front of the camera, wrote this book called Is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me and Other Concerns? And she has another new book out. It's a very thin book. It doesn't take very long to read, but Mindy Kaling is hilarious. I don't like every joke she does on her show, which is, where did I find this book? Oh, here we go. the Mindy Project, but she's a woman of Indian descent and her parents were Indian. And it's interesting because her parents were both, you know, hardworking professional people, and they expected that she would be a hardworking person too. And she grew up expecting that she would be a hardworking person, and she was. And so even though she's just making entertainment, she busts her tail to do it. And, you know, she was a bit character on the show The Office and at first. And what you may not realize is that she was actually the writer of a lot of those episodes of The Office. And she's an incredibly talented comedian. But she is a great example of just the work ethic and attitude that has led to success for many Indian women in this country and that we white men should aspire to. So I know that I probably only make, what is it, if it's the average of 53 versus 63, so I'm making like 79 cents on the dollar compared to Indian women. I'm pretty sure my math on that is wrong, but it's cool to see people coming from other countries and are able to succeed here in the United States of America, even beyond what we white privileged people have been able to succeed. Now, I must say there is a sad side to this story in that Indian women are not doing as well as Indian men. Go figure. Anyway, that was one story I saw. The other story I saw, and you should check this out, it may be behind the paywall at the Wall Street Journal, I'm not sure, but the Washington Redskins, there's a story talking about how frugal the Washington Redskins are, and it highlighted several players, and I don't know the Redskins, I don't follow individuals in football, I like football games, but I don't necessarily follow all the players, but star players who are making multi-million dollars a year. In one case, the guy had like a $57 million contract. I forget for how many years or whatever it was. It may have been 1 year for all I know. Anyway, they're driving like beater cars and, you know, an old GMC van and some like 1990s sedan. And a couple of them are living like during the football season, they live in an apartment together with like this one guy lives with his childhood friend who also works for the Redskins organization. So, and it's a relatively modest apartment so that they can reduce their expenses. And what I loved about this story was they're doing this because they realize that fame is fleeting and the ability to play football doesn't go on forever. And you're not always going to be making $57 bajillion a year. And so they are keeping their expenses low now and socking away as much as they possibly can. And isn't that cool to hear about an NFL franchise that there are a number of people, and maybe this happens all over the league, I don't know, but isn't it cool to hear that there are some guys that are sensible enough to say, you know what, this is magic time right now, but it ain't going to last forever. And so let's make sure that we have some in the silo when we're all done. We want to make sure we got some silage left over so we can eat through the winter. And they are frugal. That used to be one of the virtues, frugality. Industry and frugality and honesty and character traits like that used to be idealized and praised and novelized and told on stage in this country. We would lift that kind of thing up and say, this is how to be a great American. Episode number 22 of Scott Ott Podcast includes audio excerpts from Scott Ott Show, originally streamed live on YouTube, January 7th, 2016. For more information, scottottshow.com. Thanks for listening.